Bill Buxton is a principal researcher at Microsoft Research, and he's one of the preeminent Canadian computer scientists and designers. He often talks about one of the myths of creativity, and that is that it strikes suddenly. And I think that the comic that you're looking at, this Calvin and Hobbes comic, kind of captures that myth perfectly. I know that often we feel like we're being creative in these last-minute moments, but it's rare that it is the case that, in fact, real products actually get designed in this way. Instead, they are typically refined over a long period of time, and there's a lot of thought process going on throughout. And what happens is that an origin story is created to sort of capture a brief moment of insight, because it's a nice story to tell. So just flip through the couple of slides here. I want you to be looking at the user-centered design process. And to this point, most of what we've been talking about is IDEO methods as they relate to the investigate phase. And I told you that some of these methods actually, of course, kind of fall into the ideate and prototype phase. But what I want to focus on today is ideation. And ideation is really the process of trying to generate ideas and thinking about possible solutions and understanding what the problems in each of these solutions are. So it is kind of one of the big places where creativity plays a big role. A common complaint that we hear, next slide, common complaint that I hear, a comment that I hear from computer science students is, I'm not creative, right? And so what I want to talk about today are some of the techniques that will help you and your team to be creative together. And none of these things will blow your mind, I think. Most of what it is thinking about how you can actually apply it and doing it on a consistent basis. And this helps to shape the way that you think as you go. Next slide. So ideation is asking a bunch of questions, right? How do we come up with great ideas? How do we come up with lots of ideas? How do we come up with big ideas? And it's also thinking about how do we refine ideas and how do we organize ideas? And I think these latter two points are things that often get lost, right? We typically think about generating ideas as being the first three ideas. And how these two things are related to one another, next slide, is something that Bill Buxton talks about as the design funnel. And so Bill Buxton has been a part of the design of many products, many tools, and he describes the design funnel in this way. And so the width between the two sort of red arrows kind of tells you how many ideas or what we're working with at a particular time. And so he's showing you that it's an iterative process where you start with a bunch of ideas and you narrow it in based on some criteria. And then you generate some new ideas based on that criteria and based on what you have, perhaps. So you expand out the set of ideas that you have. And then you refine those ideas by thinking about criteria that are important, alternatives, that sort of stuff. And then you kind of go through this process multiple times. Now, he's showing this in a set of sort of four iterations. But of course, this can happen in a bunch of different, like multiple times. In a crunch kind of situation, you may only do it once or twice. And you can see that he's got a lot of useful terms there to describe sort of what is going on, right? So depending on the granularity, are we talking about overall concepts, coarse grain granularity? So we're talking about significant alternatives or intermediate development, detailed refined development. So are we talking about overall concepts, exploration, clarification, or resolution? So he's kind of using all of these terms, and you can see that how much you go out and how much you come in, this is dependent on where you are in your design phase. So I would say that for the most part, in your projects, you're kind of at an early phase. You're very far out there, right? So you can think about some of the overall concepts that you need in your tool. Next slide. So I've already kind of hinted at this, but creativity has a big place in design, right? This is the part of this course that actually has very little to do with, computer science in a science traditional sort of way. That said, I think if you talk to a lot of scientists, they'll tell you that to do the techniques that they to do the research that they do, they actually do make creative choices about what techniques to apply given different situations. Mathematicians will tell you that there is a certain amount of creativity that goes into figuring out what the right approach might be to, say, generate a new proof, right? So design is about making choices and compromises, right? So often we think about design as being this generative thing, but I just hinted that it's also a refinement thing. So you make choices and compromises, so that means coming in sometimes, right? There are three places where there's room for creativity in design. One, determining the methods that you choose to investigate a problem. So we've already talked about this with respect to those IDEO methods, right? There's something like 52 or 60 different IDEO methods, and actually choosing good ones, or choosing ones that complement each other, or choosing methods that are going to tell you something interesting, this is this requires creativity, right? Figuring out what you might see and deciding whether these things work with one another, that sort of stuff. So that's a place where there's creativity. Two, and this is the one that people think of most of the time when they think about creativity in design, enumerating the distinct options from which to choose. So this essentially means coming up with, you know, all of these great design ideas, right? All these different possibilities, right? Enumerating distinct options. I think the third thing that is actually really important, and this is the place where I think for computer scientists this is quite easy actually, is enumerating criteria or heuristics according to which you make your choices in terms of refining or discarding certain options, right? So figuring out what kinds of things we actually want in the system, what kinds of things we don't need to have in the system, and going through that process of refinement is actually a place where creativity takes place as well. Next slide. So creativity as a designer. So I've told you essentially a framework or a way of thinking about how creativity works with respect to design. I want to give you some techniques that designers actually use to help them be creative, essentially. So one of the techniques is essentially to immerse yourself in the world that you are designing for. So essentially trying to gather inspiration. And they do this in a number of different ways. Collecting examples from existing systems, collecting things that irritate you, collecting things that seem really good to you, sampling things that actually inspire you. And in 481, one of the assignments that we have, A1, actually is trying to do the first three things, right? Helping you to collect examples from existing systems that inspire you, that irritate you, that seem really good, right? Next slide. So existing systems. Here's a screenshot of my Chrome browser when I hit new tab. And what you want to do if you really like something like this, and so what I'm trying to show obviously is the little thumbnails and the quick thumbnails essentially, is to think about what is it that is making this good for you? Why is it so good? What is the general problem that it's actually solving? Where else could I use this, right? So you'd want to answer these questions for yourself. So in this particular case, what's good about it is it's easy for me to navigate to new places. Why it's good, it's faster perhaps than actually typing out these URLs or searching for them, as a lot of people do. Also, the thumbnails are really cool because they give me a visual index into these things. Other places that I could use it, you could imagine in your desktop somehow, right? Navigating through files and this sort of thing. Navigating through images that I perhaps liked, right? So some quick snapshots through. And these are different places that I could use it, but there are a whole host of other places that you could use this basic idea of having these visual bookmarks, right? Think about navigating to different places that you like to go to and thinking about how a map can actually support that, right? So I think that one of the important things in looking at existing systems is to actually practice articulating what actually makes it good, what makes it actually useful, what makes it actually usable, right? All of these things. Next slide. Something that we did in the assignment was certainly to collect things that irritate you, right? So in the same way that you want to be able to articulate what makes existing systems good, you want to be able to articulate what makes existing systems poor. And when I talk about things that irritate and things that inspire, I'm actually talking about things more broadly. So don't worry necessarily about the specific project space now, but actually go outside of that project space and look for things in general with interfaces that really annoy you. And what you will come to see is that these kinds of examples or instances or general flow that a user is going to pass through actually creep up over and over again. So here in this particular case, you're looking at the entrance to an elevator. And to me, this is an example of quite poor design. What you see is that there's an emergency call button on the left side that presumably, you know, triggers some sort of emergency. And on the right side, you actually have the elevator call button. What makes this absolutely ridiculous, of course, is that there's barely any signage next to the emergency call button. And on the other hand, the elevator call button, there's a big fire above it. Right? This is actually a warning sign if you get really close, but from here, it actually looks like a big fire. So your gut instinct is actually to hit the emergency call button. Other things that are going on here, if you think about it a little bit more carefully, are that the emergency call button is far closer to the elevator than the actual elevator call button is. And so there are all these mistakes that are happening in the design of just this space. And as you can see, this has nothing to do with computers. But if you think about how button placement is done in relation to the dialogue boxes that they often kind of relate to, these things provide hints about how people should be interacting with things. So things to think about. What mistakes are happening here? How can it actually be done better? And I'm sure you can actually think of a whole bunch of different ways that you can design this interface better. Next slide. So other things you might do are to collect things that seem really good or collect things that seem really useful and do this in real life and figure out what it is that is making it kind of a useful thing. What you're looking at here is not exactly the thing that I was inspired by, but this is something that I saw. This is related to something that I saw while I was in Japan. So in Japan, you're often at a lack of space, in a situation where you have lack of space. So the hotel room that we stayed in one time was actually no bigger than basically a small child's bedroom. So basically it fit the bed. That said, you would like to have a flashlight in the space. I think this might be some sort of regulation where you have to have a flashlight so that people can get out if all the lights go out, I guess. And what was really cool about it to me was that the holster that you kind of put the flashlight back into was a charger, but there was only one way that you could put the flashlight in. And it actually made this very, very satisfying kind of snap when you put the flashlight in. So it actually felt really good to do this. It felt really good to put the thing back. And the great thing about just putting it back was that it would automatically charge. So for me, one of the things that happens at home is that, you know, my flashlights run out of batteries all the time. You know, they're never kind of on a charger, and I can never find them. In this particular case, it was kind of embedded into a table. It was, I think, embedded into the table leg, sort of. And so it was out of the way, but it was visible, and it was automatically charging. All of these things I thought made it really, really cool. Next slide. So something that you, some other stuff that you can do is essentially sample from the inspiring, right? So here you have just some images, some snapshots from nature. And this is not something that you can always do. But essentially, what you can do is you can ask yourself, how has the real world actually tried to solve these problems, right? How has the world actually tried to solve these problems algorithmically? How have others tried to solve it? And in this particular case, of course, I'm looking at nature. But something that actually does happen is that it turns out that honeycombs are, that the shape of a honeybee's honeycomb is actually, you know, optimal in some sense. And so that actually you can use this as a way of organizing information and helping people to navigate. It turns out to be really, really clever. What are some things that are nice to look at? What are some color combinations that are nice, right? So now we're talking about simple visual design rather than necessarily interaction design. All of these things can actually inspire kind of your creativity, right? Next slide. So some other things that you can do as a designer to kind of boost your creativity, and this is something that you're going to need to do in your projects anyways, is to explain your ideas to others over and over and over again. Try it over and over again. And this is something that we see, there was this great Winnie the Pooh quote. I can't remember exactly what it was, but essentially the point was that an idea that is in your head is very different than an idea that you actually express into words. And so the point is, by expressing the ideas, it allows you to see kind of what problems your ideas have. And then furthermore, of course, if you're expressing it to other people, you can get feedback from other people about whether your idea is actually a good one. So in relation to, say, trying to be a startup in Silicon Valley, there's this myth essentially that people with startup ideas actually keep these ideas to themselves until they, you know, have the product in hand and then they try to sell it, right? In fact, what actually happens is that people are sharing their ideas with one another all the time. Perhaps not formally, perhaps over a beer, or perhaps over a coffee, but they are actually sharing their ideas over time, and these ideas actually continually get refined. So explaining your ideas to others is a mechanism that helps creativity. Taking an outsider's perspective on something that you know well. So essentially, if you were somebody that is not actually building this thing, how would you explain this to somebody else, right? This helps to simplify your language, helps to simplify your understanding of what's going on. And that simplification process actually often helps to drive some creativity as well, right? You learn that you've perhaps made something a little bit too complex, that it doesn't need to be that complex, right? Or there's a different path that you can take in terms of the design. On something that you don't know well, perhaps taking an insider's perspective is useful, because perhaps you have some assumptions about how a system works without actually knowing, right? For me, a classic example is in a breakfast diner. So in a breakfast diner, kind of the old 50s-style breakfast diners, a server is actually going to come, they're going to take your order, and they do it on a piece of paper, right? They take that piece of paper and they stick it on the kind of on this little carousel that the cooks can see, and then that bill actually becomes the thing that they give. That bill actually becomes the thing that they give you, and you take it over to the cash register. All this stuff, and what I didn't understand was, and so you know, when I saw these kind of environments, I remember thinking to myself, "Oh, they could automate this like so easily, right? They can, you know, have a mobile device to do the orders. They could have a display in the cook." You know, in the cooking area, that they can actually see which orders are done. You know, then they can generate a bill that I would pay, and I could, you know, all this stuff, right? And I was just thinking, like, this is such a ridiculous problem that they could solve through technology. It turns out that, in fact, that piece of paper acts as a reminder and actually acts as a surrogate for my order, right? I think these things are kind of obvious as I say them. But what was really cool about it was that they could see if an order was taken, if an order was placed, and what place that order would be depending on where that piece of paper was. So the location of that piece of paper actually told everybody in the whole environment, you know, aside from me essentially, what state that my order was in. If that bill was actually on my table, that meant that all the food was delivered, that meant that the cooks were done, essentially the serving staff was done, and it was actually my job now to go pay the bill. If there was no bill on the table, that would mean that there was still stuff to do. And that stuff should either be in the server's hand, where they're taking my order, or it should be in the cook's hands, right? So taking this insider's perspective tells you a little bit more about what's going on. Next slide. So this is something that designers do, and it's and this is actually a pretty cool tool as well. So to generate ideas constantly, and keeping a sketchbook to do things, and to keep that sketchbook to generate alternatives. So in this case, this is a sketchbook of somebody who designed remote controls. And here you can see actually they're trying different ideas of button layouts to figure out what might be a useful one, or what might be a good one, what might be a usable one. And you can actually see some of the numbers there, right? This is numbers 181 to 184. So clearly he's generated, or he or she has generated another 183 before these ones, right? Which is absolutely insane, but true. And this is something that designers actually do. So retaining those ideas and then being able to modify and build off of these ideas is something that designers do too. Next slide. Creativity as a designer. So take risks. Early on, it doesn't hurt at all, right? You can try something that actually doesn't make any sense. But trying something, well, I guess you wouldn't try something that makes absolutely no sense, but be willing to try things that are unconventional, right? Even if you don't stay on the path of that unconventional design, it may actually reveal to you why certain design choices are made, and it may tell you about what your ultimate design should actually do. It will provide you with some of those criteria and those heuristics that we're actually talking about. And in fact, if you look at the previous slide, sorry, back again to the remote control, some of the things that you would be doing as a designer as you're kind of generating these sketches is also thinking about what makes these things good and what makes each of these designs poor. So it is actually refining that criteria and those heuristics kind of implicitly, essentially, as you go. So a couple slides down, now I'm down to kids and creativity. So this is just, again, to try to motivate that risk thing, right? Kids seem creative because they actually don't know the rules, and so they're breaking rules without actually knowing what the rules might be. Kids don't know the consequences, so they're willing to take risks. In the same way, I argue that actually designers should be doing the same thing. Some other stuff that designers actually do once they have this collection of sketches, once they have this collection of inspiration, whether it be positive or negative inspiration, is to keep it in the sketchbook or to put it as wallpaper. And so if you go into an automobile kind of design space, this is kind of often what you see, just wallpapers of sketches. Next slide. So obviously something that you're probably familiar with is the notion of brainstorming. So it often works best in groups, can be useful in a fun process. And something that you want to do is to keep the results of the user research handy as you're doing the brainstorming, because you can go back and refer to this this set of user research and say, well, this design that we've, this sketch that we've got idea, this idea that we've got right here, this is going to work well for, you know, based on this piece of research, but it's not going to work well based on this other piece of research that we've found, right? So being able to link those sketches and those ideas with your research directly is a useful process. Next slide. When you're brainstorming for design, you want to be visual, you want to defer judgment, encourage wild ideas, build on others, go for quantity, one conversation at a time, stay focused on target, right? So these are stuff that you know already. These are stuff that you've been accustomed to with respect to brainstorming. But I think one of the important pieces that you want to focus on is that first idea, particularly in relation to HCI and design. When you're doing design as it relates to sort of interaction design, or as it relates to visual design of a tool for computer interfaces, making it visual changes everything, right? It's the exact same reason why team contracts are something that we do in this class. Making those assumptions obvious and clear help. Next slide. So in summary, there are essentially four ways you can help yourself to be creative. One is to find things that X you, right? Where X is inspire, interest, irritate, or amuse you. Find things that you Y, where Y can be things that you can improve or you can relate to. And also break the rules. So what you know now is what the role of, next slide, what you know now is what the role of creativity in design is, and some techniques that you can use to inspire creativity. And of course, the point of all this is that you use it in your own projects. Thanks.